Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Yancey Roy. I love Yancey Roy. I always thought he was the greatest guy, but I always liked him especially because his name sounded like somebody who deserved to be in a 1960s Western, sort of like Gunsmoke.
I think I was in another life. Yeah.
He's the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Welcome, Yancey.
Thanks, Alan. It's great to be here.
Okay, I guess the first thing we want to talk about is what, you know, is going on with Preet Bharara. So he's got this huge corral filled with alleged crooks, and he is making it clear that nobody's guilty till they're guilty, but he has had some things to say about all of them. But it's a huge group of people. Can you help us sort out who fits into the plot and where?
Sure. Well, there's 9 people charged by the U.S. attorney, Preet Bharara. And the sort of simple way to put the big picture is this. It's a bid rigging scheme. It's an allegation that Governor Andrew Cuomo's former closest confidant, Joe Prococo, along with Todd Howe, who was a lobbyist, who also worked for Andrew Cuomo at one time, also worked for his father, Mario Cuomo, at one time, and Elaine Calieros, who, until this scandal broke, was the president of SUNY Polytechnic Institute, conspired along with a handful of contractors, developers, builders in Albany and Syracuse and Buffalo, essentially to make sure that favored contractors, who were also contributors to the governor, won very lucrative state building contracts, whether this was to build a solar panel plant, rather, in Buffalo, a variety of facilities in Syracuse, and a number of facilities here in Albany, including a dorm for SUNY Polytechnic.
Now, the governor last week, in an astounding pronouncement, said that this really wasn't his problem because this is happening at SUNY, and SUNY was a separate agency. And if you just allow me one more sentence or two here, as an ex-SUNY professor, this is extraordinary to me because he appoints the SUNY Board of Trustees. He chooses the chair of the SUNY Board, Carl McCall. And he has been leaning on SUNY to fulfill all his economic upstate plans, or one way or another. So doesn't this come off as a little disingenuous?
Well, you take a step back and try to look at why they're doing this and how. First of all, it's a classic quarantine strategy for any administration that gets hit with a scandal to sort of try to put the so-called bad guys off in a pen, a quarantine area themselves that keeps them at arm's distance and say, these were the bad actors. We had nothing to do with it. The administration has consistently done this throughout the scandal, which if folks have been following it, you know, news of the investigation broke about a year ago, and then everyone's just been following the next subpoena, and finally charges were leveled. But when it first broke, the governor said, and again, an attempt to quarantine people. He said they are looking at Joseph Prococo and they're looking at Todd Howe. Those are the two actors that they're looking at. Now that the charges have come out and there's more people named, including SUNY, a continuation of that quarantine strategy is to say we weren't involved with this, SUNY was. Now, 2 things about that. First of all, as you mentioned, using SUNY as a vehicle to really, not fast track, but sort of streamline upstate projects, whether it was the solar plant or the film hub in Syracuse, SUNY was a vehicle.
And to say also, as we all remember, that if you append yourself to a SUNY, the people who are there will be paying no state taxes
Correct.
For 10 years.
Right. SUNY has been a big part of his upstate development. And certainly, when there was a ribbon cutting to be had, when there was a groundbreaking or announcement of a new facility, certainly the administration was leading that charge with all the press releases and all the announcements. So to now try to distance themselves from SUNY, I think strikes people as mostly just a bit of a damage control operation right there to sort of just say, we weren't in control of this. Now, we should say that Preet Bharara has said, you know, the governor has not been accused of any misconduct or any allegations of misconduct. So there's nothing that says that they were more involved at this point than they are. That said, again, the bigger picture is they wanted to use SUNY to streamline these projects, get through what they said was red tape, and make sure projects aren't held up by the usual bureaucratic stuff.
And when they were
and now it's gone off the rails.
And when they were doing that, the governor, in a mark of, I think, just chicanery, asked that the state's comptroller, Tom DiNapoli, who he doesn't really get along with that well, would not have audit function over all of these things. In fact, Gansey, isn't it possible that if the comptroller had been looking at these projects, he might have put a stop to some of this stuff?
Well, who's to say? But certainly the record is clear that the governor, when he came in 2011 and took office, made a series of moves, which, again, he put this forth as, we got to cut red tape. But what he did on in several levels, including how SUNY functions in terms of these types of projects, was to reduce the amount of oversight by taking away such things as pre-approval of contracts, so that the contracts had to be reviewed before work actually started. Now they're only kind of reviewed at the end after everything's taken place. And that he has done that at several levels. He certainly was a key part of his agenda when he first came in, was he said he wanted to streamline things.
Well, I'm not convinced. Anyway, Yancey Roy, let's talk about Elaine Calleiros. And I'm going to ask our producer, David Gustina, to get some dark music playing in the background here. So now, Elaine Calleiros is the guy who many governors have been relying on to bring chips and other things up, and I don't mean potato chips, up to the state capitol, Buffalo, Rochester. And each of these cases, Calleiros was deemed to be untouchable, the highest paid public servant in the state, had all kinds of deals going on, and fascinatingly, he's been indicted. What's he been indicted for?
Well, again, conspiring to rig the bids, and essentially, among the most sort of obvious red flags here alleged by the prosecutor is that on a couple of occasions, Elaine Calleiros sent information to the contractor that they wanted to win the bid. They sent him all the information before the bidding process was public. You know, the bidding process is probably lost on most people, but the idea is you're supposed to announce, we want to build something. Hey, contractor, send us a proposal.
Does this happen a lot, do you think? Do people who want to get a particular person in, do they tip off the people they want about this?
Hard to say exactly how much it goes on, because the only times anybody learns about it is when a prosecutor is able to press charges about someone. I wouldn't want to say it happens all the time. I'm sure it happens more than anybody ever knows, though.
I think you're right. Let's talk a little bit, Yancey Roy, about Calleiros, what he said. He said something that got a lot of attention. He said, okay, you guys are on me now, but I'm going to beat this thing. And when I do, and then he used a dirty word, he said, I'm going to F you over.
This was on his Facebook post, which we got to credit the Albany Times Union for first noticing and posting via Twitter. It caught everybody's attention. You got to think this through and wonder, who is he talking about? It was like a warning about people, he said, who are kicking him right now. Who could that be? Everybody, everyone reading the story? Could it be the media? Could it be Preet Bharara? Could it be the administration? As you mentioned earlier, the governor, in his couple of event stops after the charges were filed, pointed directly at SUNY. This is all on SUNY. This is SUNY's process. I think a lot of people now wonder, well, was Elaine Calleiros, was that a message to the administration? Stop picking on me. I don't know. Look, there's a lot of time between the filing of charges and the indictment and then an actual trial. There's a lot of time, and nothing anybody doesn't know, a prosecutor will lean on people who are named in the complaint to get them to cooperate. So I think a lot of the backroom intrigue now for the next few months is going to be what's going on in that process. Who's going to cooperate? Who's not going to cooperate?
Now, we already have one key player who has pled guilty, and that's Todd Howe. Apparently, the guy who is of the number one interest so far for Preet Bharara is Joe Prococo, an old friend of the governor. We've said it so many times it makes us sick, who the governor, when he was eulogizing his father, said was the third brother who the governor, Mario, loved the most. And that is something that almost every journalist, when they write on this, includes in their story. Now, Prococo is really the kind of stand-up guy, I suspect, who is not going to throw Andrew, who is, as Preet Bharara puts it, accused of nothing, under the bus. But He has a wife, kids, you know. Those are powerful forces.
Well, they're all going to be under pressure. Prococo is accused of accepting more than $300,000 in this scheme and pocketing it for himself. In part, to fill in some of the sort of details here beyond the indictment, is that Joe Prococo and his wife moved to a very expensive house in Westchester County with a huge mortgage payment. And so he was under financial pressure, and that might have been what led to the steps that Preet Bharara is alleging here. And if that's the case, and part of this was that Joe Prococo's wife got essentially a job with one of the companies named in this without really having to do much work. So you have to wonder, is there pressure there? Is there pressure going to be on Prococo, not only about his job with the administration, but also his family? And, you know, prosecutors have a lot of leverage to try to lean on people. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
I've been wondering about something that I haven't seen much in the papers, but I wondered if you could clear it up. Most of these guys, when they bailed out of the administration fairly early in the course of this investigation, they went to other places. One went, Prococo, I believe, to be the senior vice president at Madison Square Garden. That's a big job. Isn't that somewhat embarrassing to the people who run Madison Square Garden?
Well, I would imagine so. You know what's interesting about that is that Joe Prococo filled a number of roles for Andrew Cuomo over the years, campaign manager, a top advisor, strategist, a guy who worked with the legislature to get bills done, sometimes played the heavy for him. And he left after the governor was reelected. And the reason the governor said was he needed more money because the state salaries were somewhat confining. And so that's when he landed this job with MSG. And now, interesting to note, a little scenario here. Prococo had left the administration, and I'll take you back to April when the presidential primary was here in New York. And after the debate between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders in Brooklyn and the media hall, there's like a spin room there, and allies of either go into this area and plug away about why my guy won. Andrew Cuomo was there, not unexpected, but he was being shepherded and sort of bodyguarded by Joe Prococo, who was already off the payroll at that point. So it did catch a lot of attention. It is, and I think what it shows is that they were such good friends, such close friends, that even after he left the payroll, Prococo was still doing sort of what used to be governmental functions for him when he was working directly for Andrew Cuomo.
So we keep hearing sort of appendages to this story. A lot of people left early in the administration. One of them was Mr. Glaser, Howard Glaser. What was that all about?
Well, again, every time one of
these... His name has recently been raised again.
Right. His name has been raised in the context of this, and that he apparently was contacted during some of the processes. He was director of state operations, so he was at times in contact with some of these players, obviously, about getting some of these projects off the ground. He's not been accused of wrongdoing, but he's another one that I guess folks are probably trying to keep an eye on to say, will he end up being someone who plays a role as this case moves forward? But in terms of his departure, again, like most of the folks who have left the administration, the ostensible reason is to go out to the private sector and make more money. Also, I think anyone who's been around the Capitol would know being at that level in a governor's office is very demanding. It is a high burnout. I think that has happened with top advisors to many governors before Andrew Cuomo.
Right. Now, let's go back to SUNY, one of my favorite subjects. Carl McCall has quite a history with Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo, we will remember, decided that at the last minute when McCall was about to take on George Pataki in one of the elections, that he would take on Carl McCall at the convention, got almost no votes, and sort of hung his head down. I know Carl McCall really was not happy with Andrew Cuomo for many, many years after that. So when Andrew Cuomo gets elected, he appoints Carl McCall as chairman of the SUNY board, which I think has been very nice for Carl McCall. But now you have Andrew Cuomo saying, hey, it isn't my fault, it's SUNY's fault, and leaving Carl McCall standing there in the wind once again.
You know, what's interesting is, let's go back to something either smaller scale during this legislative session. The governor wanted the renewal of a plan that's come to be known as SUNY 2020, which is a snappy way of saying guaranteed tuition hikes, small, but guaranteed every year, a few hundred dollars, as opposed to $1,000 here and then skip a few years, whatever. So he wanted to do that. Carl McCall and the trustees had a press conference at the key point in the budget talks, and they said that they wanted a tuition freeze. which put them at odds with the governor. Eventually, no tuition hike went through this year, but I think there was a lot of friction between SUNY and the administration on that point. So it's not as though there weren't any points of friction before we get to the complaint filed this fall.
By Berar. But he, the governor appoints every member of that SUNY board. He appoints
sure.
Carl McCall, and he's not a guy who likes to be talked back to. That we know. So how does this play out? Will he take retribution? He's a guy who has a reputation for doing that.
It's hard to say. I think, you know, I think the thing is, it's going to be interesting watching how this all plays out again over the next few months. We got to figure that this case is going to move to trial at some point before the end of the year. There's a lot of sort of chips to be played. Does anyone flip, so to speak, and become a cooperating witness with the prosecution? Does the finger pointing between entities, whether that's Andrew Cuomo and SUNY or Elaine Calleros or the contractors, to what level does that have an effect on how the prosecution moves forward? It's a great question, Alan. It's going to be one of those that I don't know that will get settled until we get towards the end of the criminal case.
Okay, let's go to Eric Schneiderman, Attorney General, almost Governor, AG. We know that he's an ambitious fellow. I've always sort of liked him. He has had to do with Cuomo in the past. They've had bad times. They've had better times. The Moreland Act Commission, we will remember, Schneiderman cooperated with Cuomo and I think got some mud on his face because he deputized everybody on that commission so they could involve themselves with the legislature and other things as deputy attorney generals. And then I don't believe he was in on it when Cuomo decided there would be no more Moreland Act Commission, one of the greatest black eyes that this governor has had. So now, along comes Schneiderman, and he does a number of things which have a lot of people looking, over their eyeglasses, right? One of them is to bring charges against the very same Calleros that we were talking about. That couldn't have pleased Preet Bharara that much, I suspect, having state charges brought on top of his federal charges that Bharara was bringing. What can you tell us about Schneiderman?
Well, I actually think it's the opposite there, Alan. I think the record is clear that Schneiderman and Bharara's office had been working pretty closely together on this case. I think that this one part of the case that Schneiderman brought charges on is specifically about the SUNY Poly dorm in Albany.
Yeah.
But by and large, I think those two offices had been working together. Now, as far as Schneiderman, sure, like any politician, he's ambitious. And you raise the idea of would he want to run for governor. I got to tell you, take away the personalities. In almost any state, it's very hard to run a primary against a sitting governor. I mean, I just don't think that would be likely at all. But Schneiderman's a guy who's, he's been at it, raising his profile, not only on this case, but, to sidetrack for a second, what about with Donald Trump? I mean, he has pursued the case, the lawsuit of Trump University, saying that it's a fraud, it's a scheme, it's defrauded many of the so-called students. And also just this week, He sent a letter to Trump saying that his charity, Trump Foundation, could no longer raise money here in New York because it wasn't essentially following the protocols that charities are supposed to. And in some sense, a lot of people are surrogates for Hillary. You could make a case that Eric Schneiderman has become one of the most outspoken and out front advocates for Hillary by going after Trump on the legal front.
Well, now, everybody has to be prepared. So Schneiderman's got to be prepared in case Andrew bails and decides not to run. Things get so bad, and he's held responsible for what his closest colleagues have been doing, which are allegedly to be crooks, one of whom has admitted it. So Schneiderman has to be ready to run for governor in case, just in case. Now,
sure.
The Wall Street Journal beat the hell out of Schneiderman, just as we speak today, for being a Clinton party person and yet in going after Trump now at this point in the election. What do you make of that?
Well, we are a month out of the election right now. I think it would be a bit naive to think that Eric Schneiderman isn't aware of that. It doesn't mean that the complaints about Trump University, Trump University suits actually started years ago, but the complaint about the charity, they aren't aware of that. But also keep in mind, I think part of the reason why Schneiderman might have jumped on this charity issue with Trump right now is because there's been a lot of reporting, especially by the Washington Post, about just what has happened to the Trump Foundation money. Did it go where the candidate said it would go? Why did it go to conservative political causes? So I think that the timing kind of works together. There's been a lot of reporting on what's going on with the foundation. That might have sparked the action for the New York State Attorney General.
In the meantime, we only have a few minutes. De Blasio is in a mess, the mayor of New York. He's got Preet Bharara looking at him. The local tabs down there have been unmerciful with him. What do you make of his rise or fall in the Democratic Party?
He certainly, he does take a beating in the papers. I think that doesn't necessarily mean he's in trouble in mm-hmm. terms of a reelection right now. There's a lot of time before this happens, and we'll see. But the opponents who want to knock him off would certainly have to come behind a candidate who's got good name recognition with money.
Is this such a person? And we know that Andrew Cuomo has been alleged to have been looking hard for somebody to run against his mortal enemy, De Blasio.
That's going to be one of those that I think once you see what happens with the presidential election, is there a Democratic administration? Is there a Republican? I think then once that settles, then you'll see more action on the front, like who's going to be who's going to be elected New York City mayor in 2017.
And then lastly, something that has been bothering me for months, I've been writing about it, I've been talking about it, and that is that Hillary said it was too soon to see whether Preet Bharara would be reappointed. And then also we then heard from Schumer, who after all was the former boss of Preet, the guy who got him appointed, clearly saying the same thing, that it's too early to know. What's that all about?
I think that's just about keeping your hands untied right now. I think that's about no person who's seeking an office wants to necessarily guarantee who's going to be the U.S. attorney, or if you're on the state level, who's going to be the commissioner of XYZ.
Yeah, yeah, except Preet Bharara is a great hero, and I think it was a stupid move on Hillary's part. She needs every vote she can get. Why would you go after a guy who has been lauded as being the only one to successfully help clean up Albany?
Okay, so let me play devil's advocate. He's the U.S. attorney in New York. She's 20-something points ahead in New York. How would retaining him help her any more in New York? And would it arguably help her in New Hampshire or North Carolina or Virginia, one of these swing states? I don't know.
Yes.
Okay.
The answer is...
All right, it's settled.
No. The answer is, that people admire this guy for having cleaned up the mess. And therefore, I don't see how she helps herself by saying, let's wait. I understand the taxation commissioner in New York State or the head of IRS, but this really just threw me and thought it was really a bad move. So what can I say?
She leaves her options open that way.
Our guest has been the wonderful Yancey Roy. If we could play some Western music now, that would be really great. The Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, thank you so much for doing this. And you're always such a great guest.
Always a pleasure.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.